This is Audible.
Nervous by Zane. Read by Nicole Small. This book is dedicated to Jay, my latest creation. Mommy loves you dearly, and I only pray that Daddy and I can give you the life you deserve. Acknowledgements. Here I go again for the 7th time in 3 years, which in itself is a blessing. Always ever present in my life, and first on my list, is the Lord. He is responsible for the air that I breathe, and my health, my creativity, and my determination. Next on my list is my parents. For their continuous support and encouragement, I could never express enough gratitude or pay them back properly for all they have given me. However, I intend to try. Hubby, what can I say except thanks for loving me, cheering me up when I am down, understanding me when I flip out, often in the middle of the night, staying up with the baby late at night so I can either sleep or write or a combination of both, being versatile enough to change a diaper 1 second and handle a major business decision the next. You might not be a superhero, but you are definitely a superman. To my offspring, Mommy loves you, and as you know, when it comes to motherhood, nothing else comes first. Even if that means making the sacrifice of staying up all night working so I can spend quality time with you during the day. To my family members, Miss Betty, Carlita, Charmaine, Rick, David, Aunt Rose, Aunt Margaret, Aunt Neat, Miss Maurice and Uncle Snook, Uncle George and Miss Mary, Joyce and Ed, and all those I am close to, thanks for the support and love. To my friends, Pamela Crockett, Esquire, Destiny Wood, Lisa Fox, Karen Black, Janet Allen, Sharon Johnson, Dee McConaughey, Denise Barrow, Tracy Crockett, Pamela Shannon, M.D., Cornelia Williams, and all the rest of you Hoochie Mamas. Just kidding. Thanks for all the late-night phone conversations, the encouragement, the babysitting, and just having my back in general. To the special kids in my life, Ariana, Ashley, Jasmine, Adam, Jerlan, Tislam, Indira, Brianna, Carlin, Brian Jr., and Nicholas, remember to stay in school and get a good education because it will all pay off in the end. To my agent, Sarah Camilli, thanks for all the pep talks and, more importantly, your patience in dealing with such a drama queen, inside joke, as a client. To Maleka Adero, my editor, Carlos Brown, my publicist, Judith Kerr, Carolyn Ridey, Damon Jarrett, Louise Burke, Bridget Smith, Dennis Alou, Karen Mender, and the rest of Atria, Simon & Schuster crew, thanks for everything, and I look forward to a prosperous and long-lasting future. Thanks to the Strebber Books international staff, the Strebber authors, and all the other authors, booksellers, distributors, book clubs, and everyone else who has supported me throughout my brief but exciting writing career, I guarantee you that the best is yet to come. I'm not going to go on and on since I have books coming out every 3 months or so, smile. Just know that I love and appreciate everyone. Peace and blessings, Zane. Introduction. I wanted to pen Nervous for several reasons. I have always been intrigued by the short story I first wrote by the same name for The Sex Chronicles, Shattering the Myth. The complexity of the character drew me to her, and so many readers felt a connection with the one known only as She. Many women have two sides to them, the good girl and the bad girl. Most of the time, they try to hide the bad girl, not realizing how short life truly is and how at the end of it, there is nothing we can do about regrets and missed opportunities. I thought about what was the wildest thing that could ever possibly happen to a woman, and thus, Jonquanette Pierce was created. A woman that, in her mind, is a virgin, but she suffers with a split personality disorder. The other woman in her is a whore. The contrast between the two was a delight to write. I also love my character. Nervous is the second in a planned 5-book series that features the psychiatrist Dr. Marcella Spencer. Addicted was the first. After Nervous, Vengeance, Torn, and Patience will come. Dr. Spencer will become the main character in one, but I won't reveal which one just yet. You will have to wait and see. I hope you enjoy reading Nervous as much as I enjoyed writing it. Peace, blessings, and love. Zane. Life has never been what I expected. I only hope that one day I can live a normal one. Jonquinet. Life is a bitch and then you die. What more do you want, heifer? Jude. Nervous. For as long as I could remember, I had always been nervous. Nervous about school, nervous about friends, nervous about relationships with men, even nervous about talking to my own mother. I don't know whether it was something deep-rooted inside of me from an early childhood experience, or whether it was something that was just meant to be. I lived in my own little world by the time I was 22 years old. I was fresh out of college and working as a project coordinator for a nonprofit organization in Philadelphia. I selected that job because I wouldn't have to deal with too many people on a daily basis. I only had face-to-face dealings with a few of the people from the office, mostly women, and I was very thankful for that. My daily routine consisted of going to work, stopping off at a carryout on the way back home to pick up dinner, and then retiring to my cozy but cramped one-bedroom apartment for the rest of the night. When it came to dealing with a man on an intellectual level, any man, my palms would get sweaty and my knees would tremble a little. I'm not sure how noticeable it was to anybody else, but I was painfully aware of it. I had managed to make it all the way through my high school and college years without a single boyfriend, but I was not a virgin by far. The weekends were her time. They were the times that she came out into the light. She was my wild side, the one who craved to be fucked. She was the one who felt conversation was never needed, nor were games, because she knew within 5 minutes after she laid eyes on a man whether she wanted to fuck him or not. She first appeared back in my freshman year of college. At that time, I would spend lonely nights in my dorm room masturbating myself to sleep by playing with my nipples and rubbing a sheet or towel between my legs. I imagined having wild, passionate sex with men that had no faces until I climaxed and the sheet or towel was soaking wet with my nectar. I have always been a pretty girl. Above average, even, I would say. It was never a question of whether I thought I looked good enough to get a man. I was just too nervous to talk to the men who pursued me. They came in all shapes and sizes and from all walks of life. Most were extremely nice and attractive, but I wanted to wait and give my virginity to a man I would ultimately marry. She, though, could not wait. One cold winter night of my freshman year, I was studying in the university library when she saw him. He was average height, above 5'9", and not what one would call fine, yet attractive. It was his eyes that made him desirable. His eyes seemed to have a passion burning inside of them. She sat there, at a table across the room from where he was standing at a bookcase flipping through some pages. She could feel her panties becoming damp from the growing desire to feel him inside of her. She crossed her legs and moved them back and forth, creating a light friction against her vagina and making her desire even more intense. She didn't realize that she was simultaneously sucking on the eraser of her pencil and staring at him until she felt him staring back. She moved her eyes up from where they had locked on the bulge of his pants to his face, and for what seemed like an endless moment, their eyes met. He broke the stare and smiled at her. It was then that she noticed he had the softest-looking lips. She yearned to draw the bottom one into her mouth and suck on it. She looked back down at the economics book she was studying for a brief moment, contemplating her next move. When she looked up, he was gone. She panicked, quickly scanning the library until she noticed him getting into the elevator. He looked at her and smiled as the doors were closing. Something within her exploded, and she knew what had to be done. She jumped up from the table, leaving her books, coat, and purse, and ran out the exit door, going down the steps two at a time, hoping to catch up to him before the elevator reached the ground floor. When she reached ground level, it was too late. The elevator was empty, and he was gone. She went out the front door of the library into the cold, brisk winter air, hoping to catch a glimpse of his red ski jacket, but she saw nothing. As she turned around to go back into the library and retrieve her things, with disappointment in her heart, she looked up, and he was standing there. In fact, she bumped right into his chest and could feel her heart pounding in her own as he looked deep into her eyes, up close and personal for the first time. He opened his mouth to say something, probably to ask her name, but she put her finger over his lips. She was unsure why she did this, but she knew that talking would only ruin the moment. Maybe she feared that I would rejoin the situation, bringing with me all my shattered nerves at the thought of a mere conversation with a man. Who knows? She smiled at him, took him by the hand, and pulled him back inside the library with her. She pushed the button for the elevator. When they got on, instead of pushing the button for the floor where her belongings were, she pressed the button for the basement where all the stacks were located. She knew it would basically be deserted and dark down there. It was the perfect place for what she had in mind. When the elevator began to descend, she took his hand and placed it in between her legs. She had on a black skirt with a white bodysuit and silk panties underneath. She could feel his fingers push the crotch of her bodysuit and panties aside and explore her wetness. He brought his face closer to hers and was about to explore her mouth with his tongue when they reached the basement level and the doors opened. Just as she imagined, the stacks were deserted. He left his backpack right beside the then-closed elevator, picked her up, and wrapped her legs around his back. He carried her to the rear of the stacks, where there were a few scattered desks. He sat her down on top of one of them. Their clothes came off quickly, both of them ripping at the others until they were completely naked in the dimly lit room. She took one of her fingers and rubbed it against her clit. Then she removed it and put it into his mouth, letting him savor her juice. She rubbed the finger against her clit again. This time she brought it into her own mouth to suck the juice off her fingers. Then they began to kiss, both savoring her sweetness at the same time. He pushed her back onto the desk so that her head was hanging halfway over the rear and her nipples were protruding upward. He suckled them one at a time, not only taking her dark pearls into his mouth, but licking the entire breast, starting at the base of each one with the tip of his tongue and making light circular strokes until he reached the hardened prize. She was in ecstasy. So many nights had been spent alone rubbing her nipples between her fingers, and now a man was devouring them just like she had yearned for all that time. He took both breasts, one in each hand, pushing them together and then sweeping both nipples into his mouth at the same time. Her moans became louder. Still palming her breast, with one hand he made a trail with his tongue down to her belly button, pausing just long enough to take a quick dip into it before moving down to explore between her thighs. Before she could even prepare herself for what was about to come, he took her hardened clit into his mouth and began to let it vibrate on the tip of his tongue. She came for the first time in a matter of seconds. The intensity of having his mouth touch her there was out of this world. He continued eating her pussy for the next 15 minutes or so, and she came at least 5 or 6 more times before he had sated his hunger. Then he walked around to the other side of the desk, where her head was still hanging over the side, and brought her face to face with his delicious-looking dick. She hesitated not for a second and took the head of it into her mouth with a heightened desire to know what he tasted like. And there, with her head upside down, she sucked a dick for the very first time. She held the base of it while he dick-fed her, pushing his manhood in and out of her mouth with increasing speed. She relaxed her throat so that he could eventually get it all in. She loved every minute of it. As his body began to tremble and his knees began to buckle, she was given the added treat of tasting semen and immediately was hooked for life on the scrumptious flavor. She lay there, savoring every single drop, and secretly hoping there would be more to come. Never had she tasted anything so yummy. He removed his dick, now a little sore and tender but never the worse for wear, from her throat. After going back to the other side of the table, he pushed his dick deep inside her waiting pussy. She could feel her hymen break and realize that virginity was now a thing of her past. He fucked her hard, Considering the way she had picked him up and led the way to the basement, he had no idea that this was her first time. He just thought she had a tight-ass pussy, and he was taken aback at how snugly it fit around his throbbing dick. He fucked her without mercy because he knew that she wanted it that way. She was paralyzed at first when he stuck it in, but gradually she grew attuned to his rhythm and began to grind her hips, fucking him back. She could feel his balls slapping up against her ass and was mesmerized by the sound of his dick invading her pussy, for it was a sound she had never heard before. She loved it. After a few more minutes, she felt him explode again, this time inside her pussy walls. His sweat trickled off his forehead onto her breasts. Her stomach muscles contracted as he removed his well-satisfied dick from her sweet pussy. He began to say something. She intervened, saying, "No, please don't." She got up from the desk, dressed quickly, and looked at his dick, with the veins bulging in all directions. She knew that she had to get the hell out of there quickly, for she was half ashamed of what she had done. She was even more ashamed at how much she enjoyed it. She left him there, in the basement of the library, nude, and wondering why the hell she insisted on anonymity and silence, hoping that one day he would see her again. And one day he did, in the student union. She walked right past him and pretended she didn't recognize him. He turned to go after her and beg her to at least tell him her name. With the same haste she had entered his life, she exited it. He looked for her and she was gone. Gone like she was when all the other men looked for her. She always fucked them quietly, in silence, and then left them in awe. There was the man she saw in the grocery store line. She patiently waited for him in the parking lot, and then fucked him right there in the backseat of his car. There was the gas station attendant she took into one of the garage bays and fucked while she was waiting for another guy outside to change her tire. There were the two guys she saw playing basketball one day at the local park, who she enticed into the woods and there, on a secluded picnic table, fucked them both. And, of course, there were all the men she had picked up at hotel bars, nightclubs, and virtually every place else over the past 5 years, the total number of which she had lost count of long ago. Her appetite is insatiable and undeniable. She can never get enough when she appears. As for me, I'm still nervous, but hopefully one of these days she and I will become one and settle down with one man who can satisfy both our needs. Until then, she will just continue to have her fun, ruling the weekends, and I will continue my boring-ass weekdays. One thing is for sure, though. When I masturbate now, I have multiple orgasms and enjoy my body in ways I never imagined before. Maybe she and I have already become one. Prologue. Zoe had seen the young woman a few times before. She always sat in the back of the meeting room, seemingly lurking, and she never said a word to anyone. She just sat there with this deadpan expression on her face and listened to everyone else discuss their addictions. Brian, a white male in his late 50s, was finishing up his testimonial. "I recognize this as an illness now. I used to think I just got a little carried away with sex at moments. Then it became an obsession. There were times when I couldn't even bring myself to fall asleep without feeling the inside of a woman first. When my wife of many years refused to satisfy my needs, I would resort to paying for sex. I would find myself cruising the avenue to pick up whores. Women that had no issues about giving blowjobs for less than the cost of a tank of low-end gasoline. I realize some of them had to carry diseases. How could they not? Still, I was so obsessed with sex that I risked it anyway."
Brian's face became distorted as the first tear fell from his left cheek. One of the moderators, Grace, stood up and walked over to the podium to pat him on the back. While Brian was regaining his composure, Zoe seized the opportunity to survey the young woman's face again. Still, nothing. No sign of emotion whatsoever. If it were not for the light fabric of her rayon shirt moving slightly, Zoe would have doubted that she was even breathing. Brian pulled himself together and continued. "Now I have nothing. Alice left me. My kids are grown, living their own lives, and they hate me too much to even look at me.
I spend every single holiday alone. The pain is unbearable. If only I could turn back the hand of time and start over. If only I could make things better.
The sexual addiction meeting had turned highly emotional yet again. Several of the people broke down in tears. Not so much for Brian, but for the pain and anguish they themselves had endured in their lives of turmoil. Zoe rarely cried at the meetings anymore. Her counseling sessions with Dr. Marcella Spencer, a month at a center in Florida run by a friend of the doctor's, and a loving and supportive husband had helped her survive her ordeal. Ironically, Zoe had probably been through more drama than anyone else in the room. Her sexual addiction had led to 3 simultaneous affairs, with 2 of her lovers ending up dead at the hands of the third. Zoe emerged from her seat and approached Brian. She embraced him and whispered in his ear, "It's going to be all right, Brian. We're all in this together." Zoe glanced at the back of the room. The young woman had exited as quietly as she had entered. "Damn, she always does that," Zoe thought. Chapter 1. Jean-Quinette. I entered my third-floor apartment fighting back tears. It was hot, extremely hot. I'd forgotten to turn on the air before I'd left that morning. I tossed my keys onto the coffee table and kicked off my lower black pump heels. "You knew they were calling for a heat wave today," I said aloud, recalling the morning weather report that I'd neglected. "Why didn't you turn on some air?" The sole of one of my stockings snagged on a nail in the parquet floor as I stumbled into my hallway. I adjusted the thermostat to 70 and sighed, praying it wouldn't take long to drop down from the current temperature of 86 degrees. I continued down the hall into my bedroom and collapsed on my king-size bed. I'd purchased it despite the fact that one person doesn't need such a monstrosity to sleep alone. And sleep alone I did. Always. The red light on my answering machine was blinking. Who could possibly have called? On a Saturday, no less. Normally it would be Mama, but she was out of the country for 2 weeks. She whisked off to Paris to fulfill a lifelong dream. More like a fantasy. Mama had a way of fantasizing like no other. One day I hoped she would find whatever it was she was truly searching for. I doubted she would have called more than once at those rates, and she'd called 3 days earlier to inform me that she and her latest romantic conquest had arrived safely. I rewound the tape and hit play.
"Joan! What's up, girl? It's me!"
A bubbly female voice squealed out at me to the point where I felt compelled to adjust the volume. "Me who?" I wondered.
"In case you don't know who this is, it's me, Darnetta."
I sat up on the bed. I should have known it was Darnetta. I heard that over-anxious voice daily at work. Why was Darnetta calling me at home on a Saturday? We were co-workers, but we rarely spoke more than 2 words to each other.
"Joan, I was wondering if you want to hang out tonight. I know we usually don't flow like that, but I have 2 tickets to this live concert at Club Snatch, and everyone else I know has plans already."
There was a slight pause.
"That's not to say that you were my last choice. I was going to ask you about going out sometime soon anyway, and I saw this as a perfect opportunity. You always seem so shy at work. Anyway, give me a call if you can make it. My number is..."
I didn't even bother to listen to the phone number and hit the erase button. Me? In a club? No way. That meant a lot of people. That meant a lot of men. No way. I baked some chicken breast that I had marinated in Hawaiian flavoring all day. I cut up a few russet potatoes and boiled them along with a pouch of broccoli. While I was waiting for my meal to get done, I pulled some paperwork out of my briefcase and looked over the weekly shipping records for the office supply warehouse where I was head accountant. The numbers didn't make sense. They were way under target for the week, something that normally only happened around holidays. After all, who orders office supplies for Christmas presents? Most people take vacation the week between Christmas and New Year's anyway. But we were in the middle of August, when there were no holidays. I'd broken out my calculator and was crunching numbers when my phone rang. I debated about answering for the first 3 rings. What if it was Mama calling back? Maybe something had gone wrong in Paris. I picked it up on the 5th ring, 1 ring before my answering machine normally kicked in. "Hello?"
Joan, is that you?
I didn't utter a word.
Joan, you there?
Yes, I'm here, I replied hesitantly.
It's me, Darnetta.
I kind of figured that.
I left you a message earlier. Did you get it?
Yes, I did. Sorry I didn't call you back, but I couldn't quite make out the number.
It's cool. No problem. Sometimes I talk too loud. I'm working on all that, though. So what's up? You trying to hang out tonight or what? Lil Z is performing. The show is going to be all that and then some. You feel me?
Lil Z?
Yeah, Lil Z. The rapper? You never heard of him?
Oh, of course I have. I lied again. He's one of my favorites. I hope Darnetta wouldn't ask me to name any of his songs because I'd never heard of the man. Thankfully, she didn't go there.
So how about it, girl?
After accidentally knocking over my tea onto some paperwork, I involuntarily blurted out, shit.
Ooh, Joan? I never heard you curse before.
Darnetta chided.
What else do you do that I don't know about?
I didn't like her implications. Huh? What do you mean? I felt bad about cursing. I wasn't raised that way, but from time to time, a four-letter word forced its way out before I could push it back down my throat.
Never mind, Darnetta said. What about tonight? I really need someone to go with me, and I don't want to waste the ticket. They were so hard to come by.
What about your boyfriend, Darnetta? Even though we rarely held conversations at work, everybody knew about her boyfriend, Logan. He was all she ever talked about. Rather, bragged about in the break room.
Logan's out of town for the weekend. He went to Durham. Asshole. I'm so pissed at him. I told him about this concert weeks ago, but he made plans to go hang out with some of his immature friends anyway.
I see. I rolled my eyes up to the ceiling. Surely there had to be one other person in the entire city of Atlanta Darnetta could get to go with her. Darnetta, I'm exhausted. I had a lot of errands to run today. Maybe we can go out some other time.
Aw, Joan, please don't do this to me.
Darnetta whined into the phone.
I realize this is short notice, girl, but I guarantee you you'll have a good time. Funky music, free buffet, fine-ass man.
I couldn't help but laugh. Now I definitely wasn't going.
Joan, I'm telling you to take a chance and do the damn time with me. What's the problem? Do I stink or something?
We both giggled. Darnetta, it's not you. Really, it isn't. I just don't like going out, especially to clubs. I don't even recall the last time I've been in one.
Well, things need to change then. How old are you?
24. Why?
I've never heard of a single 24-year-old woman that doesn't enjoy going out. You have a man, right?
Now, why does she have to go there? I could never tell her the truth. She could never identify with the fact that I'd never really had a boyfriend. No one would. No, no, man. I'm kind of between men at present. You know how it is.
I'm feeling you. That's why this is a great opportunity to meet someone new. There will be a ton of bachelors there tonight, just waiting on a sexy sister like you to grace their presence.
Me? Sexy? Who was she trying to fool? Darnetta, I appreciate the offer. I can't believe you thought of me, but I really just can't make it. Sorry. Darnetta sighed into the phone. I could tell she was disgusted.
Fine, Joan. I'm gonna let you off the hook this time, but there's one condition.
A condition? I asked, still trying to reorganize my papers and dry the damp ones off.
Yeah, the next time I ask you to hang out with me, no matter where it is or when, you have to agree right this second that you'll go.
I can't really say if...
Joan, I mean it. Agree to go with me next time, or I'm going to be highly offended and get an emotional complex, thinking I really do stink, or something.
I didn't want to hurt her feelings, so I agreed. Okay.
Okay, what?
I'll hang out with you the next time you ask. Darnetta giggled.
All right. Now we're getting somewhere. Well, I better run and get ready for the evening. Even though I've got a man, I'm still trying to be fly as hell when I step up in that bitch. I still have to wash my hair, so I'm gonna go get started.
Have a good time, Darnetta.
Oh, I will. You can believe that.
We discussed work for another few minutes before hanging up. Darnetta said that if I changed my mind, I could call her back within a couple of hours. But that would never happen.
There was no way I was going to a club with a bunch of strange men around. They made me nervous. I ate my dinner and watched some cable. I was completely drained by 10. I took a hot shower, threw on some pajamas, and climbed into my bed with the latest D.V. Bernard novel, The Last Dream Before Dawn. The brother is a powerful writer, but I didn't make it through 10 pages before I passed out. Chapter 2. 2 hours later. Jude. What kind of boring sister falls asleep at 10:30 on Saturday night? John really needed to wake up and smell some strong-ass coffee. We were young, educated, and beautiful. But the way John dressed, which I hated, deterred people from figuring out the beautiful part. I was sick and tired of the ugly-ass wire-rimmed glasses. I'd broken 3 pairs and John still hadn't taken the damn hint. Our vision wasn't that bad anyway. I could see just fine without those stupid glasses. Fuck it. John could wear them, but I refused to reduce myself to that. I wasn't about to be bored, so I got out of bed, went into the bathroom, and glanced into the mirror. As usual, John had on some baggy-ass flannel pajamas that I wouldn't be caught dead in. I checked out our reflection in the mirror. Look at us. We're tall, we've got thick ebony hair, caramel skin as smooth as a baby's bottom, legs for days, and an ass men would weep over. Yet you try to cover us up like we are none of some shit. Fuck all that. A body like this is meant to be displayed. John had taken care of the bathing part, so that left me with the hair and makeup. I tore the pins out of our hair and let it flow before breaking out the curling iron to hook our ass up. John kept buying this cheap lipstick from the dollar store, but I found an old tube of L'Oreal behind some jars in the medicine cabinet, mixed the two, and it looked halfway decent. Pickings were slim in the closet, at least when it came to whore fits. I selected a black suit and managed to turn it into a somewhat revealing ensemble by going braless and leaving the blazer unbuttoned except for one button at the waistline. I was content. We were showing mucho cleavage and looking damn good. When I pulled up in front of Club Snatch, it was a madhouse. Finding Darnetta to grab that extra ticket would prove to be damn near impossible. John was always fucking things up for us. Darnetta was a cool sister. And John had no business turning down invites in the first place. I almost fainted when she agreed to accept the next invitation from Darnetta. I couldn't wait to see that. It wasn't like we had some busy-ass social calendar or some shit. Those stupid sexual addiction meetings didn't count as socializing. Joan never said anything while she was there. Besides, there was nothing for her to say. She didn't know Jack. After circling the block 3 times, I finally lucked out and spotted someone pulling out of the space. The music was slamming, but there was more than 100 people in line. I was infuriated. I wanted in there so bad. Lil Z was doing the remix of his hit, Baby Got Breast Assist for Days, and I was all into him. Joan's stupid behind and never even heard of him. That says it all. Damn, I just love bald heads. That was the first thing that came to mind when I spotted his blue-black ass standing at the end of the line. I could tell he was from Jamaica, Barbados, or some other place Joan refused to take vacation, even though I'd left numerous pamphlets and brochures around the apartments as hints. The brother definitely had my interest as I approached him. I surveyed the area. He was alone. The couple in front of him was locking lips and needed to get a room. Hell, Mr. Fine and I needed to get a room our damn selves. But I had something much better in mind. I brushed my fingertips over one of his ass cheeks. He was wearing the hell out of some navy slacks, and I couldn't resist. He swung around and glared at me with a pair of sexy brown bedroom eyes. He was seemingly pleased with what he saw before him, and his eyes dropped down to my exposed breasts. The heat had calmed down from earlier, and the cool breeze was making my nipples hard. He flashed an enormous smile. "What's your name?" Nice smile. Wrong question. Why must they always ask that? "What's in a name?" I replied. He chuckled. Sexy ass. I was trying to be friendly, being that you just felt me up. He had an accent, definite plus. I was feeling that. I inched closer to him and grabbed his dick. His huge dick. Yes, he was surely from an island, somewhere mandingos are bred on the regular. "Trust me, I haven't even begun to fill you up yet.
The line had progressed a few feet, but we remained frozen in place. Two sisters, all hoochified for the evening, walked up behind us.
"Are you in line?" one of them asked.
"I don't know. Are we?" I asked my prospective lover. "No, I don't suspect we are." He managed to get the words out even though I was latched onto his dick like a vice. I was so close to him that the sisters couldn't see what I was doing. However, I wouldn't have minded if they watched me tear his ass to shreds and slay his dick, which were my intentions. I glanced at them. "You can go around us."
"Thanks,"
they yelled out in unison. That meant two less people they had to wait behind. They were elated, and it showed. I looked back into his eyes. "So, you want to go somewhere?"
"Sure," he said eagerly.
"Wherever you want."
"That's a good puppy dog," I wanted to say.
Instead, I said, "I'm not one for bedrooms. I prefer adventure."
"Adventure?"
"Yes, adventure. I enjoy sex in unusual places. The possibility of getting caught, the thrill of someone else watching me just does something to me."
He grinned. "Sounds kinky."
"I'm not kinky. Being kinky ain't shit."
"Then what are you?"
I smirked. "A freak. A nymphomaniac. A sex fiend."
"Can you handle that?"
I let go of his dick and began to caress it.
"Yeah. I can deal with that."
"Hell yeah, I can. But you still didn't tell me your name."
"I'm Campbell."
"Nice name."
"I'm glad you think so. I bet your name is also."
He was really hung up on the name thing. I hated that. I let go of him and backed away.
"Look, I don't care to tell you my name. I just want to fuck. You're either down with that or you're not."
"Damn. Where were you like 10 years ago when I was in my prime?" I pouted. "I sincerely hope you're not implying that you're no longer in your prime." Campbell laughed. "I have a feeling you might be able to revive me."
"Let's find out," I challenged. I headed in the opposite direction of the entrance with Campbell on my tail and went down the alley behind the club. There was dim lighting coming from the office window on the third floor.
"It sure is dark down here,"
Campbell commented. I took his hand and kept walking.
"Afraid of the dark?"
"Don't be scared. I won't bite you."
I took him off guard by pushing him up against the building and ripping off his shirt. I could hear the buttons scatter across the concrete. I ran my tongue over one of his nipples and caught it between my teeth for a brief second. "That is, unless you want me to bite you."
"This is incredible," Campbell whispered.
"Most women over here act like they're afraid to be themselves sexually, but you remind me of the women back home." I didn't ask where he was from, because I didn't give a shit. Besides, no woman could compare to me anyway.
"Do you want to fuck or talk?" I asked nastily.
"Oh, I definitely want to fuck."
"Then shut the hell up."
I took two steps back, released the button on my blazer, and let it fall to the ground. After I was topless, I inched my skirt up and slid my panties down over my hips. I couldn't see Campbell's eyes, but I could make out a silhouette. He came closer and tried to kiss me, but I stuffed my panties into his mouth. "Maybe now you'll be quiet." I undid his belt and yanked it out of the loops of his pants, ran the end of it over his torso, and walked around him. "Put your hands behind your back." Campbell followed my orders, and I bound his wrist with the belt. I walked back around to face him, undid his zipper, and lowered his pants around his ankles. He wasn't wearing any drawers, freak. I ran my fingers over his chest and pinched his nipple, damn near drawing blood. "You ready for this?" He nodded and let out a muffled,
"Yes."
"Better be." I took his shirt and sprawled it on the ground so I could get down on my knees. Then I took the tip of his dick into my mouth and suckled on it. He moaned as his salty pre-cum drizzled out onto my tongue. I took the head of my mouth and ran the tip of my tongue up and down the middle of his slit, which made him moan even louder. I could make out the words, "Oh, shit," as I fingered his balls and tickled the underside of his dick by placing loud, wet kisses on it. I didn't feel like sucking his dick. I mean, really sucking it, because it was just too damn huge and I wasn't trying to develop lockjaw. After all, I was still trying to get into the concert. After standing back up, I asked, "Did you like that?" He nodded. I pushed him hard up against the building so he couldn't move, turned around, and pressed my pussy slowly onto his dick. He filled me up nicely. I started grinding on him, and he seemed like he was gasping for breath. I wasn't taking the panties out of his mouth, though. I didn't feel like holding a conversation while we were fucking. Next thing you know, the idiot was coming way too quickly. That wasn't good enough for me. I was determined not to allow him to go soft, so I started giving him some hand action immediately. It worked like a charm. Before I knew it, his dick was standing at full attention again. I didn't want to risk doing it in the same position again. He might have come fast again, even though second nuts are generally harder to bust. I pushed him down on the bare ground, not giving a shit whether his ass got dirty or not, and climbed on top of him. I started riding him and laughed when I saw someone pause at the end of the alley and try to make out what was going on. I moaned loudly to see if the person would be daring enough or nosy enough to venture down there. I was hoping it was a sexy-ass man who I could ride next. I could barely make out a shadow, but whoever it was stood there for about 30 more seconds and kept on moving. Too bad. When Campbell had worn out his usefulness, I retrieved my panties and freed his wrist. "Damn, woman! That was the shit!" he said, trying to regain his normal breathing pattern. "It was okay. Thanks for the experience." I started getting dressed while he did the same. The music was still thumping through the walls. Little Z was getting buck wild with his jam Devastated, and since that was his biggest hit at the time, I knew closing time was nearing. So much for finding Darnetta and checking out the party. I just had to catch his videos on BET. Besides, I'd gotten what I ultimately came for anyway. Dick. "So, when can I see you again?" Campbell asked. Ugh, it never ended. "See me again?" I asked incredulously. "How about never?" I walked toward the street. "Never!" Campbell hissed back at me. He grabbed my elbow and swung me around. "After what we just shared?" "We shared a fuck. Nothing more, nothing less." "Damn, you're cold-blooded." "Aw, is that supposed to hurt my feelings?" I yanked my arm free. I said thank you. "What else do you want?" "I want to see you again. I think you're fine. And you're definitely sexy. I'd like to see what you could do if we had an all-day fuckathon. So how about it?" "I can't. I don't want to," I said nastily. He was getting on my nerves. They always did afterward. It was so much easier when I wouldn't let them say anything at all. I might have to rethink my strategy and revert to my old ways. "Why not?" Campbell wanted to know. "I don't have to explain myself to you." I laughed in his face and started for my car. "I felt like doing it. You looked enticing at the moment. You served your purpose, and now it's over. Get a life." Campbell stopped in his tracks and yelled out, "Bitch!" I turned and leered at him. "I'm not your bitch. If I were you, I'd just walk away before you make me angry. Trust me, you won't like me when I'm angry." He must have taken my threat to heart because he started speed walking in the opposite direction. Good for him, because I was serious as shit about it. I took no drama from anyone, not even Joan. And if she really started tripping, she would have to find that out the hard way. Junquenette. It happened again. I woke up the next morning on my sofa with my black suit on, my hair was curled, and I didn't have on a bra. Plus, I was hurting down there. I was terrified. Was I insane? I ran into the bathroom. The curling iron was on the vanity, and the pajamas I'd put on the night before were cut into shreds and stuffed in the wastebasket. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I jumped into the shower and noticed a foreign smell on my body. Someone else's scent. A man's scent. A different man's scent from the last time, and the time before that, and the time before that. I wanted to make the 8 o'clock service at church, but barely got there before the sermon at the 11 o'clock one. Reverend Townsend preached from his soul. I was always moved by his words. The newest member of the deacon board kept staring at me, making me nervous. He was attractive and appeared to be in his early 30s. I couldn't have handled if he'd actually said something to me. I didn't want to take the chance that he might actually approach me after the service, so I stayed long enough to tithe and then left before the recessional. Chapter 3. October 1985, second grade, Pembroke Pines, Florida. Junk Winnette sat on the playground, wishing she was any place else but there. Every day her mother dropped her off at school. She dreaded walking up the front steps and through the large metal doors. She loved her teachers and desired to gain knowledge, but the way children bullied her was depressing to a 7-year-old girl. The teasing never stopped, nor did the names. Retard, fatty, ugmo. Junk Winnette's self-esteem was non-existent, having long been destroyed by many students. One in particular. Her name was Brenda Morrison, and all the kids adored her, or at least pretended to adore her. There was nothing really special about her. She just carried herself and talked about herself like she was unique to the point where all students started to believe her. This particular day, Junk Winnette was sitting on a bench while all the other second graders enjoyed their recess time after lunch. She was staring at the sky and daydreaming, hoping that a bird would come whisk her away and drop her in a better place. She hated the outfit she had on, a pair of pink capris and a top that had way too many colors in the pattern. She preferred darker colors to match her mood, depressed. Her mother had spent hours the night before cornrowing her hair for the school week ahead. On Mondays, everyone was always overactive after spending the weekends at parks and playing sports. Junk Winnette always kept to herself on the weekends. She didn't know how to make friends, and since no one ever invited her anywhere, she would just sit on the front porch and watch cars drive by at rare intervals. Junk Winnette couldn't wait until the school day was over. Just 3 more hours and she could escape. She was lost in her own little world when Brenda marched up to her with 3 other little girls in tow.
"What are you doing, fatty?" Brenda hissed at her. "Where's my money?"
Junk Winnette shrugged. Every single day, Brenda would demand that she give her a quarter. Most days, she would manage to sneak into her parents' bedroom and grab a quarter off her father's valet tray. However, it had been an impossible task that morning. Brenda leaned down and punched her on the arm.
"You heard me, retard. Where's my quarter?"
Junk Winnette lowered her eyes to the ground.
"I don't have it."
"Excuse me?" Brenda asked angrily. "Did you just say you don't have my money?"
One of the other little girls, Francine, said,
"That's what she said, Brenda. You gonna beat her up?"
Brenda glanced around the playground to make sure all the teachers were occupied, trying to make sure no one was falling off the equipment or butting in line at a slide. She turned back to Junk Winnette and glared down at her.
"No, I'm not gonna beat her up. Not today. I'm just gonna slap her."
Before Junk Winnette could block it, Brenda's hand smashed against her left cheek, causing an incredible pain to shoot through her entire body. All the little girls started laughing and doubling over to hold their stomachs, all except Brenda, who issued a warning.
"Tomorrow, you better have my money. 2 quarters instead of 1, or I'm gonna beat you up for real."
Junk Winnette broke out in tears. How could someone be so cruel? She never bothered any of them, and yet they continued to torment her day after day. She turned her eyes back up to the sky, waiting on that magical bird to come swoop her up. 2 minutes later, the tears were gone, and anger replaced the sad expression on Junk Winnette's face. Jude had had enough. Brenda and 2 of her groupies were in the little girl's room, cheesing in the mirrors and talking about going to the county carnival that weekend. They didn't even glance at the door when Jude came in. Their mistake. Jude slipped into a stall and closed the door, not bothering to lock it. She wouldn't be in there but a few seconds. When she came back out, she had the ceramic toilet top in her hands, clutching it like a paddle. By the time they saw Jude bring it up over her head, it was too late. She was already swinging. She nailed Francine right across the stomach first. She screamed and fell down on her knees. Then she went for Rhonda, another student who constantly had Brenda's back. Rhonda tried to duck, but Jude stepped on her foot, causing her to stand back up partially to lift her foot and grab her toes. That's when Jude got her across the right shoulder. Rhonda fell to the tile floor, but was in too much pain to even voice a scream. Brenda just stood there at first,
wondering if she could make it to the door safely without getting a major beatdown. It was obvious that she couldn't, so she resorted to intimidation.
Fatty, you know you're not going to touch me with that. That would mean I'd have to beat you up every day for the rest of the school year.
Jute let out this horrendous laugh. You must think you're talking to Jonquinette. Brenda eyed her with confusion.
Sorry, Jonquinette's not here right now.
Brenda asked,
What are you talking about?
I have a message for you, Jude responded. Don't ever talk to or touch Jonquinette again, or you'll have to deal with me.
With that, Jude slammed the ceramic top across Brenda's head, and three teeth popped out of her mouth on impact. She hit her three more times with it, once more across the face, once in the ribs, and once on the knee. Brenda lay motionless, and Jude was satisfied. She looked in the mirror. While Jonquinette could stand to lose some weight, there were numerous kids her size or larger in second grade. She stared at her reflection. Don't worry. I'm here to protect you. Jonquinette didn't know what was happening. All she knew was that the physical education teacher, Miss Turner, was restraining her for some reason. They were loading Brenda, Francine, and Rhonda into ambulances in front of the school. There were police cars in front of the building, and everyone was glaring at her and shaking their heads. She saw her parents pull up in their Volvo station wagon and practically jump the curb coming to a halt. The look on their faces as they emerged from the vehicle was frightening. Jonquinette fell down on her knees and cried.
What did I do? She screamed as her mother approached her with outstretched arms. I didn't do anything.
Chapter 4. July 1987, summer vacation. Jonquinette came flying out the front door of her house, excited that the weather was so nice. She'd had her share of cartoons for the morning and craved some fresh air. Her parents had offered to send her to summer camp, but she couldn't imagine dealing with the same nasty kids during summer vacation that she had to deal with during the school year. It was sunny, but not too hot. She had lost her favorite ball underneath the porch that day before and got down on her knees to see if she could locate it. She spotted it about 4 feet under the steps and went to find a large enough stick to retrieve it. After much effort, Jonquinette managed to get the ball out and was elated. She started bouncing it up and down and fell in love with the pastel colors of it all over again. She accidentally bounced it too high, and it went over the neighbor's picket fence. Jonquinette panicked. Miss Greer wasn't always the nicest person in the world. Besides, Shadow, her poodle, tended to bark a lot, and even though he seemed harmless, Jonquinette wasn't sure whether he was a biter or not. She didn't see anyone peeking out the windows, and Shadow was nowhere in sight, so she decided to chance hopping over the fence to get the ball and hopping right back over. Jonquinette had got it and was climbing back over when Miss Greer yanked her front door open and started screaming,
You little wench! What are you doing on my yard?
Jonquinette hung there with both feet straddling the fence but neither touching the ground.
I'm sorry, Miss Greer. I was just getting my ball.
Miss Greer came catapulting down the steps.
You have no business in my yard. Not to get a ball or anything. My yard is my pride and joy. Mr. Greer, God rest his soul, spent his entire life making sure this yard was beautifully kept, and I will not have little brats destructing my property.
Jonquinette was at a loss for words as she dismounted the fence. She went to sit on the front steps, lowered her face into her lap, and cried. Miss Greer went back into her house and slammed the door. Jude was sitting on the stoop playing jacks when Miss Greer came back out of the house with her pocketbook in one hand and Shadow's leash on the other. She paused halfway down her walkway and leered at Jude. Jude leered right back at her.
When your parents get home, I want to have a word with them.
Miss Greer lashed out at Jude.
I'm not gonna have any more of your mess.
Jude didn't say a word, just hissed between her lips as she watched Shadow take a dump on the front yard. The so-called beautifully kept front yard.
Why is it that I can't get a ball off your yard, but that little runt can take dumps all over it? Huh, bitch? Why is that?
Miss Greer was shocked and at a loss for something to say for a moment.
Just Wait till your parents get home.
Jude smirked and stuck out her tongue. After Miss Greer and the mutt loaded into her Impala and drove away, Jude grew angrier by the second.
Why do you take crap off people, Joan? That bitch ain't shit.
In the middle of the night, Miss Greer's scream could be heard 2 blocks away. Jude lay in bed grinning while Mr. and Miss Pierce turned on all the lights in the house as a bang came at the door. 15 minutes later, they came into the bedroom where Jude still lay amused and sat down on opposite sides of the bed. Jude didn't want to be bothered with the bullshit, so she let Joan take back over. Joan was stunned to see both her parents sitting on her bed.
What's wrong? What happened?
Junk Gwinnett, someone poisoned Miss Greer's dog, Shadow, her daddy said. Do you know anything about that?
Shadow? No, I don't know anything about it.
Her parents both eyed her suspiciously. Are you sure? Her father quizzed again.